Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith and hope is expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast at epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, a priest of the Armenian Church. Welcome you to the next step. Are you ready? Oh, this is going to be a good one today. Hey, Susie's talking about disenfranchised. I like that. I think there's a story to be told. But before we do that, just want to welcome you aboard. The next few minutes we're going to be together. We're going to be looking at life through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. We call it Armodoxy, and it's part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. This program is being brought to you on the Epostle Network, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. So let's take the next step. Oh, I like that. Isn't that an experience, huh? If you're listening to this on headphones, it's a special experience, right? When that guy's running, we got to figure out who that guy is, but he's running, right, at the end of the Next Step jingle, and then he's going from one ear into the next ear. If you're listening on headphones, I don't think it works if you're just listening with speakers, especially if you're listening through computer speakers. Stick on some headphones, and he's running from one ear into the next, and somewhere in the middle, he gets, well, you figure out that he's somewhere in the middle of your head. You know, and this is like these are like metaphysical questions. Huh? You never thought you'd get into that. Huh? Where is that guy who is running on the next step? I was just talking to my... I know. I was talking to my son the other day, Sevan. He's taking a course in metaphysics. And, of course, it brought back to mind my metaphysic days. I took a course in it back at Claremont School of Theology. And I remember talking about time travel and outer body experiences and stuff like that. So I asked him, what are you studying? And he's talking about, like, what happens if half of your body is taken away and it's replaced, it's sewed up, or you get another person's body, and then at what point is that person you? At what point is it somebody else? And it's an interesting idea, because just this morning, I was hearing that a group of pro-lifers, and I hate to use that expression, making it feel like if you're pro-choice, you're not a pro-lifer, but pro-lifers, let's say group of people that are against abortion, have approached it in a different and rather novel. I don't know why somebody hadn't thought about this before, but they're approaching it by trying to, they're calling it the personhood movement. Basically, if you can show that little embryo, what is it, the zygote, at the point of conception has a soul, then at that point you can justify that that's a person, and therefore abortion would be akin to, if not equivalent to, murder. And so it's an interesting argument that they're doing. And it was just really just yesterday that I was talking with Sevan about this whole idea, this metaphysical idea about at what point are you the person? You know, what if you do lose half of your body? What if you lose a hand? What if you lose, you know, a part of you in surgery, okay? And what happens at that point? What makes you you? Where is the mind, where is the soul? Have you ever thought about it? Like, where is the mind? I mean, we all think it's in the brain, and yet you know that there are other traditions that think that it is more centrally located within the body, and yet others who say that it is surrounding all over body and mind. And anyway, that's not our discussion today, but it was an interesting idea because we started off in a metaphysical kind of idea with like, where is this guy running, right? You heard it, right? It was in one ear, then it was in the other ear, his footsteps. But somewhere along the way, it was somewhere in between the two ears. And what is that? That's the brain, that's the mind, processing that stereo effect, processing the signals that are coming in. And it processes it and it places it someplace, right? And you imagine it to be in between the two ears. Well, if this interests you, and if it doesn't, that's where we're going today. Actually, we're going to go there in a different way. Where do these things exist? Where does the concept of God exist? How about the concept of, well, like homeland? How does the concept of identity all fit with this? This is like a continuing discussion, and I'm going to get to it in the second portion of our podcast today. Just wanted to give you a little briefing on that real quickly, because I do listen to that every single week as I've got the headphones on over here. It just occurs to me that that guy is running from one ear to the next. How do you get that effect, okay? Where is that guy? Okay, don't hurt yourself thinking about it. We will get to it. We may not figure out where the guy's going, but we will definitely talk about where we're headed. And that's coming up in the second portion of today's show. I want to talk about some non-metaphysical events, some things that happened in reality all around us. Hey, tonight, In Her Shoes, we're kicking it off with a meeting in Glendale, but we're also out in the on the web. We're going to be up at Glendale Community College today organizing the first meeting. And this is Team In Her Shoes taking a step. You know, look at the beautiful metaphor that we keep building on. You know, we have In Step with Christ. We have the next step, the compass, which points us in that direction. And today we have Team In Her Shoes to walk in the shoes of cancer, particularly breast cancer victims as well as survivors. We're going to be walking the walk, so to speak, and hopefully stomping out cancer once and for all. But it is small steps that we take. And one small step we're taking is tonight we're going to be kicking off Team In Her Shoes in Glendale. But I do invite you to get involved, even if Glendale is a little bit far for you. There are so many opportunities to get involved via the web. There's a presence on Facebook. Just put in Team In Her Shoes. Actually, if you friend any of us, we'll be able to point you in that direction because we happen to be in Team In Her Shoes. And by any of us, it's the crew that's assembled here at Apostle Studios. Today we've got Ken over there, we've got Susie, our producer, and we've got Ani coming up with her bubbles. So get to be friends with any of us or just that. We'll be happy to push you in that direction. Anyway, that is about Team In Her Shoes on Facebook and, of course, coming to life tonight. Hey, listen, speaking about team, I want to thank you all for the support for the nomination. I found out yesterday, Susie gave me the good news that we have been nominated for the Podcast Awards this year, the People's Choice Awards. Wow, that is exciting. Thank you. And I guess they're going to be announcing the winners of the different podcast awards at Blog World and New Media Expo. It takes place next weekend, and we will be there. The Apostle crew, yes, all of us will be there, and we'll be on the floor. And if you happen to make it out there, please do make a point of seeing us. Yes, even you, Ken. We're letting Ken out of the cage, and he's going to be joining us, but no, not the kids. Yes, those kids that come up and they yay me once in a while, they reside in a small little closet here at the Apostle Studio, and they're not allowed. They're not going to be able to come to Blogger. Okay, complain all you want. You're still not going to come. Anyway, we are going to be at the Blog World Expo, and do join us if you have a chance. We'll put a link on our show notes. If you happen to be in the Los Angeles area, do stop by, and we'll make a day of it. We'll be out there and finding out all the fascinating things. It was actually last year, that time, that we met the people over at Blueberry. And, you know, a lot of you have been listening on Blueberry. And, well, it started because of our contacts that we made at Blog World. A lot of people like us trying to figure out how to use this new media. And there's so many ways. You know, we were just talking about it. Linda Zadoyan, who does the Compass show on Epostle. And I've got to tell you, if you haven't had a chance to listen to number five, wow, it was magical. It was magical the way it evolved. The strength of the divine liturgy in everyday life. It was like a practical approach to the divine liturgy. Something we've talked about many, many, many times here on The Next Step. But the way it evolved, it was just very magical. Do check it out. We were talking about the entire medium of podcasting. How can we make podcasting more accessible? Now, you're listening to this show, so the discussion is not about you, but you know that there are so many other people that find it difficult. Let's say the technologically challenged people, you know, because still in podcasting, whereas in radio or television, it's basically hitting a button and it comes on. And you could say, well, the same about podcasting. It's hitting the podcaster button or hitting an MP3 file and listening to it. But there's still an extra few steps. It's downloading it. It's having it reside someplace, streaming it, listening to it, and so on. And so it gets to be a little bit more challenging to listen to it off the cuff if you wanted to get a podcast, or you wanted to say, okay, here's Compass, let's listen to it. So we were just talking about that, and I got to share with you one of our listeners and a good friend. He happens to be on the St. Peter Parish Council, where the Youth Ministry Center resides in Glendale, Azad Derbedrosian. He sent us an incredible little project that he had put together, and I'm very pleased by it. It's so exciting. It's In His Shoes Radio. Yeah, In His Shoes Radio. And basically what you can do is it answers the problem of, are you downloading? Now, the advantage of podcasts is, of course, it resides someplace. So you could listen to it, you could rewind it. Radio is not that tolerant, right? Radio, once it's shot out, unless it is rebroadcast, you don't hear what was said. You didn't get a chance to record it. Well, this is sort of the best of both worlds, because it is internet radio, and it means that you can, of course, listen to it, and it will be replayed, because these are on like endless loops. And what he's done is he's basically put some programming on there from the In Issues website, from the different podcasts that we do. So we're really excited about this, and we will definitely put it on our show notes today, but probably in the next few weeks you will see that radio station evolving. And I want to just commend people like him that, you know, they take the initiative to listen in and see where the needs are and really propose something. It's one thing not to just propose it. It's another thing to really put it together and say, okay, here it is. So I'm excited about that. And that's something I'm looking forward to in the next few weeks. So that's coming up as well. We start off and we kick off every show with the song of the day. A couple weeks ago, I talked to you about Steve Jobs. Actually, I gave you some personal reflections, because I happen to live, you know, the Silicon Valley, the San Jose Cupertino area. If you have a Macintosh computer, look at the bottom and you'll find out that it comes from Cupertino. That's up in Northern California. And I was the priest in Cupertino of the Cupertino Armenian Church from the 80s to the 90s. As Silicon Valley was evolving, so was the Armenian community up there. And we brought together a group of Armenians and formed the St. Andrew Armenian Church up there. And this was taking place simultaneously as we were watching the Silicon Valley evolve. And I spoke about this a few weeks ago on my podcast, because it was a personal loss for me as well. Steve Jobs was very well known, and of course the innovation, his creative energy, has touched us in many, many ways. And along those lines, last weekend they had a nice celebration of his life, and I had a chance to be there in Cupertino for a celebration of Steve Jobs' life at the Apple campus. And a singer, Nora Jones is her name. And she sang a beautiful rendition of Bob Dylan's Forever Young, and I wanted to share it with you. So here it is, from Steve Jobs' celebration of his life in Cupertino, California, Nora Jones, Forever Young.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. May you stay up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong. May you stay.
Was Norah Jones singing a Bob Dylan song, Forever Young, in tribute to Steve Jobs. This is from last weekend on the Cupertino Apple campus. And we do mourn it, but we also celebrate a beautiful life that has touched so many people in very unique ways. Are you ready for a metaphysical journey? How about a virtual journey? How about just a journey? Well, last night we had a beautiful opportunity to share in a journey that was taken by a young man named Garo Gulakyan. And last summer he had the opportunity of driving, chauffeuring two bishops from Armenia through historic Armenia. Now, historic Armenia, today they call it Turkey. It was all the lands that were taken away during the Armenian genocide and in years before that. This was all historic Armenia, and there was proof of that in the sites that they saw. So there we were last night at the Glendale Youth Ministry Center at St. Peter. He showed the slides, and I think we broadcast it. I know for sure it was on our Questions in Faith broadcast that we did it, but I think that they came out okay, and I'm not sure, because afterwards, the conversation that was taking place, Lilo, who produced last night's show, she sent me the chat, and there wasn't anything out there. So my suspicion is that people probably got turned off because the actual stream that we were feeding were not the slides that we were showing. It was a picture of the slides. So I don't know. I apologize if it didn't turn out that well. But one of the good things about last night was, I think the overwhelming response from the people was that he needs to do something with these images and with his story. So hopefully that'll come out very shortly. He'll have it posted someplace on the internet. He'll produce something. He'll have a book made. Something will come out of this journey, because it was very unique. Here is an American young man Garogulakian, who goes back to Armenia. He gets two bishops. Actually, they set up a partnership, the three of them. He drives in this Nissan SUV, spending $12 a gallon. Yes, you heard me right. Those of us in the United States do not have it bad. I mean, when I think about $12 a gallon, and I apologize, elsewhere in the world, I have no idea what you're paying. We're paying about $4 a gallon at the pump, very close to that, hovering around there, both sides of it. So when we heard that, wow, wow. But what commitment, what dedication to go through Armenia and seeing all those sites. And there he was. He was showing us these beautiful churches, these monuments to faith that were now desecrated. Some of them had actually collapsed, and some of them were renovated as well. Some of them were in the process of renovation. Very few of them, but some of them were. So we saw the whole gamut. We saw different churches and different relics, different artifacts of faith. Now, here's where I want to talk about this idea of a virtual reality. Has it ever occurred to you that when you talk about things, they exist where? In your mind. And many times, I could talk to many people in my personal experience about Armenia. They will share about Armenia. They will talk about this place. And I know we have many listeners who are non-Armenian, but you could relate. You could talk about some place where you haven't visited. And you talk about it in terms that you know. And we basically set up an artificial reality, a virtual reality. For many people, Armenia is still that virtual reality where you see Mount Ararat. Mount Ararat is the resting place of Noah's Ark. You see those two beautiful white peaks. You see a monastery in the foreground. You see beautiful green grass, and you see the sheep grazing in the grass. And this image, this icon, so to speak, is an image that comes home. You know, it defines what Armenia is to you. People say Armenia, and that's the reality that is real in their head. And you think about it, that we have this opportunity to create these realities. And in many senses, this is the argument against religion, that man has basically created a reality that takes place between his two ears. And it exists within this brain, within the mind, within the soul. And this works, you know, it works out real good when you start thinking about it, right? You start thinking about it and you go, okay, yeah, then all that we talk about, religion, faith, must be just made up. But why? Why does it have to be made up? Doesn't it begin with a reality itself? I mean, even that concept of the virtual Armenia, right? You have that in your head. You have that Mount Ararat. You have that monastery in the foreground. You have the green grass. Close your eyes, you could imagine it, right? And in your head, that is Armenia. So when you see or you think of Armenia, that's what you think about. Now, it gets clouded when you go and you see the reality and you realize that, okay, hey, Yerevan isn't the capital city of Armenia is an industrialized city. And of course, it has smog. It has dirt. there's problems over there. There's people there, you know, and it's not that green pasture that you see in the pictures. Okay, so what happens? All of a sudden, your virtual reality is checked by reality. Okay, now this is what happens many times too for us in the field of religion, in the idea of God. Okay, we have this image of God, and it is a virtual image of God. Okay, it exists between our two ears. It's somewhere in our head. We imagine God to be this, that. Okay, he's superhuman, he could do everything, he knows everything, he's ready to take you out if you're bad, he's ready to comb your hair if you're good, and so on, right? Until we check it against reality, and then we find, yeah, there is smog there. We find that, hey, there are bad things, that sometimes bad people get rewarded. It seems like they're getting rewarded. And it sometimes feels like the good people, well, they die young, and they're not rewarded. They're in fact smited. They're sometimes hit down by God. And so the reality checks the virtual reality. Well, of course, because, well, the reality can be checked, right? The reality you could touch, you could feel and everything. And somehow we feel that that reality is of at a higher level, so to speak, than the virtual one, right? Than the spiritual one. And so if you think about it for a moment, yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, I mean, I could touch reality. I know things. Okay, I could visualize a car. I could visualize a boat. But when I touch it, I could see it. I could feel it. I know what it's made out of. I could test it. I could empirically test it. And then check to see if that virtual one, the one that was in my mind, is real or not. Is a proper, let's say, a proper explanation of it. Okay? Now, here's where we have the problems. When it comes to God, right? You can't do that. What are you going to check? But now think about it. When Jesus came, what happened? He was the check. He was the reality. Okay, now this is what's interesting about the entire Jesus story and what we teach here at Armadoxy. Okay, the Jesus story is not only the check to the virtual idea of God, but it is the correction to the virtual idea of God. So you have this idea of Armenia, of Mount Ararat, of the beautiful monastery and the green grass and the sheep grazing. Then you go to Yerevan and you check it out and you say, okay, well, there's smog here, so we got to get rid of that green grass area and kind of haze it up. And there aren't any cattle out there. Actually, they're on their backs because most people have made kebab out of them. And then you look at the monastery and you see that it's been destroyed because through the years people have abused it and so on and so on, okay? So you've now checked. Now, of course, nobody could touch Ararat. Anyway, one of the caps blows off, I guess, if the volcano ever gets active again. Okay, so you check that virtual idea, that concept, with the reality that you're able to touch, with the reality you are able to see. And this is what happened with God. People had this messed up idea of what God was. And so God said, let me show you. That's how simple it is. That's why I always insist we start off with the New Testament. Because when you get into that whole stories, the stories and the ideas that are expressed in the Old Testament, they're beautiful stories. They're stories of virtue. There are so much you could extract. But in themselves, there's nothing that redeems you. There's nothing that can save you. The only thing that can save you is God. And so God manifests himself. We see Jesus Christ and he dispels the myths. The virtual reality is now gone because you have a reality in front of you, right? So you can now see what the reality is all about. And so in the past, you've got this God who's angry. He gets so angry, in fact, that he once wipes out an entire civilization, save for a couple people, has a flood. Just destroys everybody and says, okay, you're all bad people. Turns people into pillars of salt. In fact, he picks on one guy because, you know, he just wants the guy to get a little bit better. And Jesus comes and says, okay, these stories are okay for you to learn something, for you to get a message. But you've taken it too literally. You've understood God in these stories in a literal fashion rather than understanding these stories as metaphors for the big story of God's compassion. And so Jesus, rather than talking about that, expresses it in his love, in how he comes out and he talks to people, how he heals people, how he lifts people up. He resurrects people from the death, physical as well as emotional. And so all of a sudden, we now understand God in a new idea, the New Testament, the New Covenant. We now understand that God is our partner. God is our friend. God is our sister, our brother. God is our father, our mother. God is inside of us, outside of us. He is the all. As much as we try to find words, we cannot express it. He is Chorut Chorin, mystery inscrutable, without beginning, without end. He is something greater than all the words that we can put together. And the beauty of it is, he is love. I know, you got the warning bells going off now. Okay, you're talking about reality, now you're talking about love? Yes. Because, okay, the virtual reality is the idea of love. And now, here's the test. Jesus, the reality. And what does he do? He sacrifices. He gives the formula for love by being love incarnate, by reaching out to whoever needs it without saying, hey, you're white, you're black, you're gay, you're straight. He looks at him and he says, you are a human being. You are my children. Why would I hate you? I love you. By the reality that he resurrects people. People who are dead, people who are walking zombified, looking in the mirror and not seeing anything because their lives don't have any meaning. And all of a sudden, he gives them meaning by saying, if you are my child, I care about you. Why would you wander off? Why would you feel that you're worthless? You are worth something. You are my child. And so Jesus, the reality, dismisses the misconceptions of the virtual reality, the myths that we saw that we have. Now you say, how did all this come about? I tell you, I saw it last night in those pictures of Armenia. Because those pictures of Armenia give me a check that yes, beautiful, my background, my personal background, my ethnic background happens to be Armenian. It's filled with wonders. It's filled with beauties. And I too, like everyone else, imagine this beautiful country. And the reality is there, that these monasteries has been desecrated, have been destroyed by the Turkish people. And those are realities that we have to live with. Okay, so that was a check against the image that I had in my head. Jesus is the check against all those images that you have in your head. And I'm saying this because today, more than any other time, we need to have a clear understanding of what faith in God is all about. We are clouded, we are polluted with these insane images. We are polluting our minds and the lives of our children. I want to tell you that especially too. With these bizarre ideas that somehow God is sitting up there in the clouds with a thunderbolt in his one hand and with a big stick in the other hand. And if you mess up in life, he's going to send that down to you. He's going to smack you and you're going to be electrified and you're going to be out of it. That is not the God that we know. Jesus Christ proved that. We think of God sitting up there in the clouds in judgment and looking. What does Christ say? He has given that judgment to me, and I say, go and sin no more. Remember what he said to the woman? He says, where are your accusers? Neither do I accuse you. Neither do I condemn you. And what do? We find the speck in our brother's eyes day and night without finding the log in our own eye. We're so ready to judge others. When Jesus himself said, hey, I am the example. I am the check. The check against your reality, and you're seeing it. Here is my life. Here is my death. And now here is my resurrection. You know, last week we had some interesting comments about that story I shared with you about Stacy Krim. We're going to come back after Ani's Bubbles today. We're going to share it. We're going to continue on that entire idea of family. But it's based on this virtual idea and the check that reality gives to us. Here's Ani with today's Bubbles, a special one for Halloween.
This week's Spiritual Bubble is a Halloween edition. I really wanted to find a good bubble for this week. Something sort of spooky, but with all the good intentions to celebrate Halloween. I searched and searched on the internet, and wow, what a disappointment. Everything was either Halloween is evil, it's all about worshiping the devil, and super negative, or it was really scary and full of stories about witches turning little girls into blocks of wood for a fire. What? What happened to the Halloween that I celebrate? It has always been a holiday of the imagination. As someone who loved playing dress up was always about finding the perfect costume. He never dressed as a ghost or a goblin, nothing ugly. That's just not what we did. As soon as October came around, my mom and I would go together to the fabric store to pick out just what we needed to make the perfect costume for the year. There was Pippi Longstocking, Rapunzel, Pocahontas, and the year all my friends and I bought footy one-piece pajamas and walked around school like babies all day. It was just a bunch of fun. It was about candy and friends, having the family over to carve pumpkins, getting to play with those goopy insides, and cleaning the seeds out to roast them and eat them like good Armenians. It was taking a big group with you all around the neighborhood to see whose house was decorated the best and who could fill up a pillowcase with candy the fastest. I always loved the jack-o'-lanterns carved out so differently at each house and that burning pumpkin smell when they sat out too long. I have an older brother, so of course there were some tricks, but nothing was ever done with evil intentions, and if he did scare me, he always said sorry in the end. It seems like now kids want to dress up as something scary. They want to watch movies about ghosts and creepy clowns and monsters and things that are just ugly. What made our Halloween so much different? I don't think it's a time thing or a generation gap. I don't like to think that I'm that old that I can say things about how things were back in my day. But the difference really was how we were raised. We were raised to love things that are beautiful. Things that are fun and playful and caring. Halloween was just like any other holiday at our house. Something that was celebrated together with family and friends all month long. The media will always be putting out messages of scary things in October. But there's all those fun things too that no one really focuses on. Like pumpkin patches and carnivals. It's all about the perspective that you put on the holiday. It's about how you choose to celebrate it in your life with your kids. If you see Halloween for the fun times that you can have, the scary stuff isn't that big of a deal anymore because it's not part of your holiday. So this year, celebrate Halloween with some imagination. Go make your costume, carve a pumpkin, and roast those seeds for a snack. Don't give in to the ghouls and the goblins. And don't get pegged as the Christians who don't celebrate Halloween. It's not about that. It's about family and the love that you share, the memories that you make, when you're having a good time together. This has been your special Halloween edition spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven while you eat your candy corn.
Thank you, Ani. How perfect. Just perfect. You hit it right on the head. It's like a message for the next steppers. Be something. Do something. Create. Have fun with these celebrations. I remember, as I was listening to this just now, it reminded me a few years ago when I was the pastor at St. Gregory in Pasadena. And over there you have a church and you had a school right next to each other. So the school is actually technically part of the church. And that first year that I was the pastor there, I remember calling in the principal and calling in a few people and talking about Halloween plans. And you should have seen their faces immediately. They were expecting like what they've done traditionally. Like, this is a devil thing. We don't do it. We ignore it and keep on going and let's play Karunyerevan instead, you know. And I go, we're going to celebrate. We're going to have like different costumes. We're going to have costume contests. We're going to have people dress up as the saints. Can you imagine that? It is All Saints Day and All Hallows Eve. Why not have them dress up as saints? And they just like looked at me like, are you crazy? But I tell you, one of the most fun things was, and something that always people remember, was that first year's costume party. We just like packed up a hall with people dressed up in really beautiful and unique creative costumes. We got some pictures of that. You know what? I am feeling in the mood. If I could find one before we publish today, we'll put one up. You'll have to guess who the people in the pictures are. We'll see if we can get it in our show notes. Thank you. Wow, how cool is that? Where do we keep those guys, huh? That was nice. Okay, we are going to talk about family. Remember, I promised you last week I want it to be an ongoing, a building topic. And I shared with you the story of Stacy Krim. It happened to have been the one story that got the most reaction from our listeners. And I didn't want to build on that. Because Stacy Krim, if you remember, we shared it with you last week, was the mother who had to make that incredible decision. She was pregnant. They found out that she had cancer, and she could be cured. She could be treated and cured with chemotherapy, but it would mean losing the baby. And she refused the chemo treatment. Instead, the baby was born healthy, and the mother passed away, not before she had an opportunity to hold the child in her arms. And this is a very touching, moving story, but a very real story. And stories like this need to be told, because these are the stories that tweak the negative realities that are out there. They tweak them into the positive, because they emphasize, and this is the key word here, is sacrifice. Sacrifice, we know, is badarak. It is at the root of the Jesus experience. Jesus Christ himself goes up on a cross, sacrifices, teaching us, not with words, but with action, that as the head of our family, he sacrifices his life for us. That's right. The Christian family, St. Paul explains it so beautifully. He says it is the body of Christ. The head is Christ, and we are the body. So that head, there he is, sacrificing for his children. And it's that story, this Krim story that we said. It is what yet one more example. And these stories need to be told. They need to be heard. They need to be shared. Because when we talk about family life today, we have polluted it. We have convoluted it into this understanding that it's just people who live under a shared roof. And I'm sorry, it's not. Family means sacrifice. It's not about habitation. It's not about where people live. I mean, you know, I know that there are many families who don't in particular live under one roof, and yet they consider themselves one family because, well, they are of the same breed, right? They define it because of their blood relations. Others define it because of their spiritual relations. I consider my parish, for instance, my spiritual family. There are people in there who are older than me that still look at me and call me father. There are people in there that are younger than me, and I look up to them and I see the image of God inside of them. We are all brothers and sisters in this one big family. We call it a Christian family. And that's why it's so beautiful that the Armenian people, and this is another element of Armodoxy, that we have taken that IAN to mean the family of, the son of. And so if your last name, in most Armenian last names end in IAN, it designates the family of. For instance, my last name, Movsesian, the family of Movses. There must have been somebody in the lineage whose name was Movses back down, and it was the family of that Movses that I belong to. Another one, my cousin's Tosunyan. Tosun means bull. So this was somebody who was probably breeding, somebody who was taking, or perhaps physical features, somebody who was huge, who could maybe take down a few people. And that guy was a tough guy, right? You look at another one who's, I've heard Voskerichyan, somebody who is a jeweler in the family of the jeweler. Now think about the word Christian. Hey, there it is. IAN. The family of what? The family of Christ. The son of Christ. Christian. Christian. That's the word. Spell it out. C-H-R-I-S-T. IAN. You want to spell it with a Y-A-N? You can. It still works. We are the children of Jesus Christ. We are part of his family. And it is so beautiful that we can express it this way. Now, Once you have that idea, you understand that Jesus Christ did that expression of sacrifice. And so when you find stories like this, Stacy Krim, you cannot avoid it. You need to use it as the reality check. Okay? There it is. A mother giving her all for her children. And I'm sharing this with you because this is what is missing. The other day, a good friend of mine, one of the priests, young priests in the diocese, he was sharing me the tragedy of a young man who had taken his own life. And we were talking about the different dynamics that were at play. Because this young man had a zest for life. He had a love for the things that he could accomplish. But it wasn't enough to have that love. What he needed was the sacrifice element in that life, to understand that all of life is a struggle. All of life is a sacrifice. The other day, somebody came up to me and they complained about their life. And you ask the person, you say, well, what is the problem? And their complaint is that they have to give and give and give. Well, guess what? That's what life is. Because it's in that giving that you define yourself. It tells you who you are, right? Because what are you giving? You're giving away things that are important to you. Why are they important to you? Well, then you start defining yourself. This all connects with the idea of identity within a family. It is so, so important. Last week in our Compass broadcast with Linda Zadoyan, we had an opportunity to talk about identity. And if you caught that, I made this little offhand comment, and it needs to be developed a little bit more before I could share it with you. But I do want to reiterate it over here because I think it's an important one. Many times in the Armenian reality, you have people coming up and claiming that Armenians are only Armenian if they are part of the Christian family. Yes, people make that mistake. They say that to be a good Armenian, you need to be a good Christian. Now, it is a mistake, which I happen to believe, okay? But it's in a different way that I approach it, okay? Now, if you are a good Armenian, it means that you have all of these things and your belief system is one that adopts Armenian orthodoxy. Christianity is defined by the Armenian Orthodox perspective. Because everything we have as Armenians, I mean, think about it. I've shared this with you how many times. I mean, think about the reason why we have an Armenian alphabet. It was created so that Holy Scripture could be translated. Armenian prayers were created to translate the faith to the people. The Armenian language was solidified, was codified with an alphabet so that the faith could be transferred. Basically, for that Christian faith, Armenians developed a culture which was documented with the writings, with the alphabet. And so in many ways, people will say that to be a good Armenian, you need to be a good Christian as well. Now, I take exception to that, and I want to turn it around. I'll say that if you want to be a good Christian, you need to be a good Armenian. And you say, what? Wait. Haven't you just like excluded like 99.9% of the world? Yeah, you could say that. But think of it in this way. What does it mean to be a good Armenian? Well, a good Armenian is somebody who understands suffering. A good Armenian is somebody who understands that suffering is not an end. A good Armenian is somebody who understands the power of resurrection. And so when you talk about that Christian reality, and you understand what Jesus Christ is all about, you cannot turn your head to the Armenian experience that's happening right now. Whether it's the corruption within the politics, whether it's the decay of the family life, or whether it's the economic reality that's overtaking so many parts of the world, and especially in Armenia, where you have poverty, where you have people trying to make ends meet in a very real way, fighting off homelessness, fighting off starvation. These are realities that are out there. And so as a Christian, you need to be able to react to these problems. And this could be in Armenia, it could be elsewhere in the world. Armenia becomes the prototype, the sample, so to speak, becomes the measuring stick by which we measure how we're going to be giving, how we need to and why we need to give to others, and why that giving process, yes, implies sacrifice. It is sacrifice, and it is a necessary component to our lives and our identities as human beings. I hope you're with me so far. This is a part of a little discussion we started last week. I want to keep building on this, and I'd love to hear from you. Do drop us a line. Drop me a line personally at feedback@epostle.net. Would love to hear what you have to say. Well, that about does it for today's show. Before we go, I want to wish you all a very happy and safe Halloween. Enjoy the weekend. As Ani said, go out there and be creative. It is Hallows Eve. It is a time to remember the Hallows, the Holies, the Saints. Remember what they've done in our lives, in history. Go and check them out. Do a quick search. Find out a saint. Read about them. You know, this is quality time that you can spend with your family. Read the story of a saint, have them discuss it, say how we can get dressed up as a saint, and then go out there and trick-or-treat to your heart's content, saying that you are celebrating All Hallows' Eve. That's how simple it is. Just do it. And I want to thank Ani for that beautiful bubble, which inspired us all to think this way. Hey, listen, before we go, I want to invite you to all of those special programming that we have at epostle.net, because Ani is just one part of it. And if you like what you hear there, there's a lot more to come. Throughout the week, you can find special programming every single day of the week at epostle.net, from our Compass podcast to our Bible studies in Armenian, in English, as well as our Next Step. You can find not only this Next Step, you can find all of the archived issues of Next Step episodes. You can find our sermons online and the latest edition, which we hope to have in the next few days, a little bit streamlined, and that is In His Shoes Radio. Wow, is that exciting! Turn us on and let it go and just listen to all the great music, all the great programming that's on there. And speaking of In His Shoes, that is our mothership. Do check out the website, inhisshoes.org, where you'll find information about what's going on and how we are walking in the shoes of others. Not to forget that we're walking in her shoes. Takes off tonight. And I'm heading out that way. I'm putting on my shoes right now to go and walk in her shoes. Team In Her Shoes kicks off this evening. A big shout out to Anush, wishing her all the best as she organizes the team that will be walking that finish line next year in the big Avon Walk. Exciting times. You'll be hearing a lot about that in the coming weeks. And do check it out. It's on Facebook, Team In Her Shoes. Final thing, if you get this podcast today on this Thursday, do go to the link that we've provided you. There is exactly a few more hours left where you can vote for the podcast for the People's Choice. If you like Next Step, give it a plug out there. It has been nominated. It is one of the few podcasts in the religious category that has been nominated. We are so proud of the work we do over here. It can't be done without you, without your prayers, without your support. Keep us always in your prayers. For Susie, our producer, what a producer. For Ani with her bubbles, yes, happy Halloween, Ani. And for Ken, who never needs a mask, this is Father Toskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.